This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. It's Thursday, and here we are again to review this week's new movie releases. This week, we have a rom-com with Julia Roberts and George Clooney. We have a superhero movie starring The Rock and an animated Halloween movie starring Key and Peele. Carlos Aguilar is here. He reviews for the LA Times and The Wrap. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. And Whitney Seibold contributes to Slash Film and co-hosts the podcast Critically Acclaimed. Hi, Whitney.
Hello.
Well, first up, we have The Rock in Black Adam, and this is his DC Comics superhero debut.
This loose cannon needs to be locked down before innocent people start getting hurt.
He's been asleep for 5,000 years.
If you find us a cell that can hold him, we'll take care of the rest.
Who's on the team?
I didn't bring a passport.
We don't need passports. We're the Justice Society.
All right, Whitney, give us the Cliff's Notes version of this plot, which I guess you can do because it's a superhero movie.
So very briefly, this character, Black Adam, finds his origins in pre-Babylonian times when his people were enslaved by an evil king, and he was granted powers by the same wizards that we saw in the movie Shazam from 2019. Fast forward to the modern day, he is reawakened in a military-occupied modern country and proceeds to murder everyone around him. He is quite a violent man. This is Dwayne Johnson, Black Adam. And then the Justice Society, a quartet of brand new superheroes without an origin story, are called in to do lengthy battle with him over the course of the movie. But Black Adam is, at the end of the day, not very fun. It's not fun to watch. I think Black Adam is not a terribly interesting character. The only twist he offers to the superhero genre is that he does murder people. Most superheroes work very hard not to do such a thing. He doesn't care. The ethical quandary brought up by that isn't really addressed in this movie. It's more about all of the mayhem and all of the superhero fights that sort of stretch throughout this entire movie. It's also really noisy. There's just music throughout underneath. It's just a slog. It's really difficult to get through. It makes you wonder how much further we can go with all of this superhero stuff. It's starting to feel like we're on some sort of decline, and Black Adam isn't doing anything to help the superhero genre or the popularity thereof.
Wow. One could say it's a metaphor for what's happening in the country.
I suppose so. Maybe it's more timely than I realize.
Okay, so skip that one. Black Adam in theaters in wide release. I guess, Carlos, you were mercifully spared. So we'll talk about the movie that you saw next. It's After Sun, and this is on the opposite end of the spectrum. It's a quiet, small indie film, a father-daughter drama written and directed by first-time Scottish filmmaker Charlotte Wells.
Don't you ever feel like tired and down and feels like your bones don't work, like you're sinking?
You never know where you'll end up, though.
Okay, Carlos, I understand that this is semi-autobiographical, the filmmaker Charlotte Wells exploring her own real-life relationship with her father. Tell us more.
Yeah, I guess I have to preface by saying that while it's hard to say that a film is the best film of the year, it's definitely my favorite film of the year, and I think it's unmissable and, you know, just a beautiful, beautiful work. The film, as you mentioned, is sort of, you know, inspired by a trip that the director took with her own father to Turkey when she was, you know, around 10, 11 years old. And as we see here, Paul Mescal, the Irish actor known for Normal People and more recently God's Creatures, he plays a young father, barely 30 years old. Callum is his name. And yeah, the young daughter, Sophie, played like Frankie Corio in her first ever role in a film, which is incredible considering what she does in this movie. They're spending, you know, a week together in Turkey in this sun-drenched resort. And, you know, slowly we sort of get to witness through Sophie's eyes the sort of quiet unraveling of her father. And yeah, it's a small movie in the sense that, you know, it's really, you know, a story that you could say you've seen a million times. You know, father and daughter take a trip. They, you know, there are moments of joy and, you know, tension between them. But really is the way that Charlotte Wells, you know, presents this memory, the sort of fragmented and at the same time very fluid way in which she builds this beautiful picture. really gets at you. I feel like by the end of it, you're really affected by this relationship and makes you think about your own relationships with, you know, with your parents and with other people, about who you were when you were younger, the things that you couldn't understand back then and that you now perhaps, you know, can sort of like, you know, grasp better as an adult. And yeah, it really packs a punch at the end. It's one of the best endings also I've seen in a long time for a film.
Wow.
So yeah, I would really, really highly recommend this movie.
Okay, After Sun in select theaters beginning tomorrow. Let's move on to The Banshees of Inisherin. This stars Colin Farrell and Brandon Gleeson.
I have a set of shears at home, and each time you bother me from this day on, I'll take those shears and I'll take one of my fingers off with them, and I'll give that finger to you until I have no fingers left. Does this make things clearer to you?
Not really, no.
Starting from now. But shush like, Polly. You know, shush like.
Yeah, I'd shush like.
All right, Whitney, this is directed by Martin McDonagh, who also directed Farrell and Gleeson in that comedy In Bruges, a really good movie. Mm. And they are here again. They play lifelong friends. And I guess the Gleeson character doesn't want to be friends anymore?
That's the premise of the movie. The Brendan Gleeson character has decided, rather unexpectedly, to no longer be friends with the Colin Farrell character. And the stakes are raised from there. As you heard in the clip, he threatens to cut off his own fingers in exchange for Colin Farrell's silence. This takes place in the 1920s in Ireland. There's a civil war raging just across the bay, and they're on this really little remote island, and you sort of feel that the violence of the time is leaking over. Colin Farrell is really baffled by everything that's happening with the Brendan Gleeson character, and because he's baffled, he persists in bothering Brendan Gleeson, forcing him to perhaps make good on his threat to cut off his own fingers. There's this strange gallows, Tales from the Crypt-style sense of humor underneath all of this, but there's also a really palpable sense of confusion and desperation in dangerous times. This film is many, many things at once. I'm not sure what it's doing best. At the end of the day, it's really quite depressive. It doesn't have a lot of uplifting things to say about the human condition other than confusion appears to be our default, but I'm really fascinated by this.
Is it funny?
Some moments are really rather funny. There's a few warm moments between Colin Farrell and his pet donkey, Jenny. He insists on bringing the donkey into the house, which really upsets his sister, who he lives with. And all of these almost Disney-esque moments between him and the animals lend this off-balance sense of humor to the entire thing.
Ooh, Carlos, what did you think?
I liked it more, I guess. I think this is really good. And to me, it wasn't so much about confusion as it was about, you know, one of the reasons why he doesn't want to be friends with Colin Farrell's character anymore is because he wants to pursue his musical sort of journey. He wants to leave a legacy, leave something behind. And for the other character, Colin Farrell's character, Patrick, he wants to be a good man. He thinks that, you know, being happy and being sort of remembered as a good person is more important than a sort of like legacy that stands the test of time. And, you know, he begins that character, you know, in this happy-go-lucky kind of journey to, you know, becoming bitter by this relationship with the Brendan Gleeson character. And so to me, there's something very poetic and tragic about how this pursuit of greatness can sort of overlook the beautiful thing that they have with each other, which is, you know, a friendship that it's so hard to find, you know, and especially in Ireland at the time. And so to me, that transition from joy and from just wanting to be a good person to realizing sort of the darker side of the human condition is very powerful and tragic. And I like that it doesn't end in a sort of simplistic, easily resolved manner.
Okay, The Banshees of Inisherin is in select theaters today. Moving on to Ticket to Paradise. This stars George Clooney and Julia Roberts as bickering ex-spouses.
I need to sit somewhere else. We used to be married.
Worst 19 years of my life.
We were only married for 5.
I'm counting the recovery.
In 4 days' time,
our daughter's going to marry a guy she just met in Bali, millions of miles from home.
I just really want to kiss you. It's like I looked up for the first time and realized everything I ever wanted was right in front of me.
Okay, Whitney, you saw this one. And is this, I'm sort of getting a little Hepburn, Cary Grant vibes here. Should I be?
Julia Roberts and George Clooney, like you could power a factory with their charm. This is a movie that coasts entirely on that. It's also a reunion between Clooney and Julia Roberts. They were in the Ocean's 11 movies. It's also a reunion between Julia Roberts and the premise of My Best Friend's Wedding. This is about a divorced couple. They really, really hate each other, and they travel to Bali to break up their daughter's wedding.
How do we not know exactly what's going to happen at the very opening scene?
Oh, you do. You know what's going to happen throughout this entire movie. You know every single beat. There is
love
nothing
will triumph.
Nothing unexpected. Yes. There is nothing even
can learn from the young.
Incredibly funny or insightful about this movie. What it has is just a bottomless pit of affability. It's very charming. It's very bright. It was directed by Ole Parker, who did Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. So it's that kind of just bright, chipper, going to move trippingly from scene to scene. There are additional romantic complications. Of course, George Clooney and Julia Roberts are going to start falling for one another again in the process of trying to ruin their own daughter's life. And there's an additional complication that Julia Roberts is dating a handsome young French pilot.
That's not going to last.
Yeah, I know. It's really unfortunate for you meet the character and you think, oh, how unfortunate for him that he is just going to end this movie in a very sad place. There's nothing here that will not offend your grandparents if you take them to see this movie. There's nothing here that will surprise them. This is the kind of movie where someone comes to the box office at the movie theater and says, one for George Clooney, please, rather than really caring what the movie is about. And all you want is a complete puffball that will distract you for maybe about 100 minutes. This is the kind of movie you want. Otherwise, it is a wisp. It will just blow away.
A wisp. Okay, well, you can blow on over to theaters beginning today to see Ticket to Paradise. Last up, we have Wendell and Wild, a stop-motion animated feature from Jordan Peele, who stars alongside his buddy, Keegan-Michael Key.
So, as your masters, we order you to turn around and,
You're tripping.
All right.
Cats demons
are raising an army of the dead.
Okay, Carlos, this is directed by Henry Selick, who brought us Coraline, which was fantastic. So what did you think of this one?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of animation and stop motion in particular. I know, like you mentioned, Henry Selick is sort of a legend in the medium. He also directed The Nightmare Before Christmas. And, you know, he's sort of like a staple in that realm. This one, continues with that sort of blend of comedy and horror, you know, otherworldly, sort of like spooky elements that, you know, most of his films have. It's about, you know, Wendell and Wild, who are two demons who want to escape hell and build an amusement park in the human world. There are a lot of themes going on here. You know, at some point, you know, we really are engaging with the prison industrial complex in a way that is sort of like palatable for young audiences. And, you know, that gets, you know, a lot of the important issues across. It was written by Henry Selick and Jordan Peele collaborating really closely. And I think that comes across in sort of the blend of humor that's here. Yeah, I think this one's really, you know, incredible to watch, just because, you know, if you know how stop motion animation is brought to life, you know, painstakingly frame by frame, you know, everything you see in the frame has, you know, been for the most part physically built. And so in this case, you know, Henry Selick decided to leave the seams in the faces of the characters, which are usually raised in most stop motion animated films today. He wanted to leave sort of the marks, you know, that let you know that there's a hand behind the work here. And so I'm always impressed by that. And this one's very fun. And even though it's a little overstuffed in terms of the themes and the plot, I feel like it's a really spooky and great Halloween movie for kids and adults that enjoy animation.
Whitney, what did you think of the animation, and did you have fun watching this?
The animation is first rate. The character design is really angular and kind of strange looking. I really love just looking at every single frame of this movie. It's really gorgeous. The film opens with a sequence in hell where we get to see the devil laying on his back with a carnival built on his stomach, and he tortures souls on the little miniature souls on his stomach. And Wendell and Wild, played by Key and Peele, live in his hair, and it's their job to plant his hair plugs. So there's a lot of really bizarre imagery going on just right away. It's a really cool movie. Kat, the main character, who's played by Lyric Ross, is constantly listening to just really awesome music. She's listening to X-Ray Specs and Fishbone, and it's just really, really awesome. A lot of the actual, like, demonic plot and Chosen One narrative and YA fiction stuff doesn't come together very well at all. It's kind of difficult to figure out what the rules are to this universe or what the plot is actually getting at, other than what Carlos said about the prison industrial complex and finding your place in the world. But I would rather a film sort of whiff a plot or mess up some sort of structure in the service of something really visually unusual and ambitious. And I feel like Wendell and Wild really hits that really hard. It's just really great.
All right. Well, we have some good ones this week. Wendell and Wild in select theaters tomorrow before streaming on Netflix beginning October 28th. It's exciting. We have some good movies to watch. Finally, thank you both so much for coming on today.
Of course.
Thank you.
Carlos Aguilar reviews films for the LA Times and The Wrap. Whitney Seibold contributes to Slash Film and co-hosts the podcast Critically Acclaimed. Coming up, Evan Kleinman is here with ideas for your movie watching, popcorn eating. That's next on Press Play.